This is Crime Binge.
Welcome to Crime Binge,
the podcast.
It is.
Our podcast.
Guess what?
What?
Happy Friday the 13th.
And people are saying it's Friday the 13th and a full moon, but technically it's like a full moon tomorrow.
Oh.
So it's like, it's still full, but not the fullest.
It's like spooky season, but not full spooky
yet.
Yeah,
it's not full spooked.
No. Yeah.
That's, but also, we have a Friday the 13th in December, too.
Ooh.
But none in October. Spooky Christmas.
Spooky Christmas.
I love spooky Christmas.
It's just an excuse to have spooky Christmas.
Yes.
Leave up bats, put up Christmas lights.
Honestly. Right? Not a bad idea.
I think that's a great fucking idea. But this week, because it's a spooky time of year.
Yeah, and we're trying to stay spooked for the for the Friday the 13th.
We thought we would do something that is kind of different. It still involves a death, but we are going to cover an exorcism today. I like the gesture that went along with Sarah's noise was like spirit hands, but her fingers were like worms, like the way that they moved. So
it was embarrassing.
No, it was kind of spooky. Little worms. But yeah, I thought it'd be fun, like an exorcism.
Yeah, that but it's still cool. Like true crime towards the end.
Yeah, exactly. So but I guess we should first, what are you binging this week?
Oh,
almost
yeah,
forgot to do the whole bit.
So I have one that I've been binging for like 5 years, but yeah. I'm just gonna say it because I saw them last night in concert.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Would be Rhett and Link / Good Mythical Morning, but yeah. I saw Rhett and Link live in concert last night and it was awesome, and I like binged all of the episodes from this week because I used to watch them every single day when they would come out, but since I've gotten this puppy, I have to like go home on my lunch break instead of staying at work and watching the videos.
Right.
So before I went, I had to like binge them all. But yeah, it was super fun and super cute. And I love Rhett and Link.
That's awesome. I'm glad it was super fun.
Yeah.
Because you do love them. Sarah,
I do,
loves them. I feel like you binged like their book or something before. Or maybe not.
No, there was one time that I had something to binge and you asked me if it was Rhett and Link because I said I've been binging it for a long time.
Yeah,
and
that's probably what it was. Yeah. You're right.
But what are you binging?
I am binging a book called The Road by Carmack McCarthy.
Is it the book you were reading at work today? Because I saw you reading a book.
Yeah, I've been trying to read on my lunches to like enrich my life.
Ugh. As I race home to let my dog out and not have him poop in the house.
And yeah, skip lunch to exactly, not have your dog poop in the house.
When's the last time I ate lunch?
But I was assigned this book in college. And did not read it.
And it took you this long to read it.
Yes. I think it was like for an extra, like if you did an extra paper on the book, you could do it. But like we're already reading a novel every week. And to read another novel was just like too much if all of your classes are like that.
Because Morgan's a lit major and just
and it's lit,
reads
fam.
Constantly. Yeah.
I'm so sorry. Yeah. But it's like a post-apocalyptic book.
Okay.
Which is my fave. Like, mm-hmm. That's my fave genre. And it's, like, the most vague thing you've ever read. Like, the main characters' names are the man and the boy.
Oh.
And, like, you never really fully find out what happened to cause the end of the world. But, like, they just allude to it a lot. And you, like, have to piece it together yourself.
That's interesting.
It's pretty cool. I haven't finished it yet. I still have like 50 pages, but I've been reading it for like the past week and a half on my 30-minute lunches.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's really good though. And I'm like,
that's cool.
I
like
have
I
read it sooner.
I've never read a book that's like that. That's not really straightforward.
Yeah, it's really interesting because it's not set up like a standard book in the format either, because conversations between like the son and the boy will just be like, okay, it's okay, are you sure? Yes. And like, you don't know who's speaking. You have to figure out who's speaking. So it's very, very vague. And like the first couple of pages, I was like too vague.
Mm-hmm.
But now I'm like super into it. Azula is flipping the fuck out right now. She's like slamming her body into this window. There's probably like a bug on the other side that she wants.
Are you done?
Okay. But I saved this to tell you.
Oh, yeah.
I saw It Too this weekend, which I really liked it. It was good. I liked the first one better. But there were four teenage boys who sat behind us with a father who talked throughout pretty much the entire movie.
Like, why?
I don't, like, my biggest pet peeve is don't pay to see a movie if you're going to talk throughout the whole fucking thing.
Yeah, and it ruins everyone else's experience.
Yeah, because also behind us were three old ladies who also talked the entire fucking time.
You have the worst luck
in really
movies.
I really do have the worst luck. But halfway through the movie, because usually I'll turn around and say, can you please shut the fuck up? Because, like, I get real angry. Like, halfway through the movie, I turn full body turn in my seat and just stare at them because I wasn't gonna like say anything. I wasn't gonna get hot-headed because I'm a hot-headed person. And the dad like finally nudges them and tells them to shush. So the teenage boy proceeds to put his foot on the back of my chair and shake his leg for the entire movie.
Oh, no.
So he's shaking my chair for the entire last hour of the movie.
Was he, like, you said he was, like, a teenager?
Yeah, like, he was, like, a 15 or 16-year-old boy.
What a fucking dick.
And I was like, Taylor, you're gonna have to hold me back. And he was like, do you want to switch seats? And I was like, I'm gonna be an adult, and I'm not gonna say anything. But when they got up to leave, I just, like, death stared my crazy stare at them, and I was livid.
So when I went to Busch Gardens for the first time, like 2 or 3 weeks ago, and we only ended up getting to ride two rides because it was raining and stuff, but we're in line for Cobra's Curse. It's like an hour 15 minute long wait.
Yeah.
And well worth it. Was a great ride. Loved it. But there was a family behind us, like a mom, dad, and three, like, teenage kids.
Yeah.
And, like, the dad was screaming at the top of his lungs the entire time.
Yeah.
Like, at anyone who rode by on the ride. Like, he was just screaming at the people that were riding it. And then...
Was he, like, drunk?
No. Oh. I don't think so. I think he was just trying to, like, impress his kids. And then their whole family also had no sense of personal space.
I hate that.
And so, like, the daughter kept bumping into me and my boyfriend and, like, stepping on the back of our heels. And so, like, I really loudly, once we got towards the end of the line, I looked at my boyfriend and was like, wow, it's so crazy how, like, we were standing behind these people the whole time and we didn't hit them at all. But like, we keep getting hit because I'm also a bitch. And I kept just making myself as big as possible. So that way, like, they wouldn't crowd up on us because they were literally like standing on top of us.
Yeah.
And so I would like, I just like moved my arms around and like had my legs spread while I'm standing.
Yeah, I do that shit all the time. Like, here's the thing. If you go out in public, don't be a dick.
Yeah. People like their personal space. Don't go in their bubble.
If you're paying for events, don't fucking talk during them. Don't be on your fucking cell phone during them. And, like, don't... If you're closer than a foot to me, I will just turn around and look you in the face. Like, my favorite thing to do is just stare at people now to make them feel super fucking uncomfortable because it's been working so far. And, like... I just don't understand it because I'm not that person.
See, I like in this situation, I would have my arm like on the rail.
Yeah.
And the girl would start like leaning or like she would just lightly touch my arm because she would be that close, like with the back of her arm. So I just started leaning against her. And like she eventually kind of stopped a little bit.
Yeah.
But like I was like, if you're going to touch me, I'm going to touch you back harder and just put all my body weight on you because apparently you want to support me.
Yeah. It's the worst.
Support me financially, not physically.
Wow. My new life motto. I don't need a man. Just support me financially, not physically. Well, with that tangent to kick things off today, we are going to get into our episode of The Exorcism of Annalise Michelle, which you may have heard of before if you're like a true crime or paranormal buff, but this is The Exorcism of Annalise Michelle, whose mental illnesses were diagnosed as a possession of the devil, depending on what you believe, because, like, maybe it was the devil.
Yeah.
And the result of her illnesses, exorcism, and the neglect of her parents caused her death. These events were actually the inspiration behind the movie The Exorcism of Emily Rose, which, I'm going to be honest, I have not watched because exorcism freaks me out so much that I don't like watching exorcist movies.
That is the only exorcist movie I've ever seen is the one of Emily Rose, but I saw it when it came out in theaters like 10 years ago, and I have the worst memory of my life or of like anyone. And so, it came out 2005, so 14 years ago.
Goddamn.
So I don't remember it at all.
Yeah. Yeah, we were in the fifth grade, so.
Yeah, I saw some fucked up shit. But kind of telling you more about Annalise before all of this exorcism happened to her.
Because she was just like a normal girl.
Yeah. She was born Anna Elizabeth Michelle, and they started calling her Annalise. It kind of combines her first and middle names. So she was born on September 21st of 1952 in, oh God. In
Leipzig? Leipzig?
Yep, it's in Germany. Leipzig, Bavaria, West Germany. In an extremely Roman Catholic family, to her parents, Joseph and Anna.
Which, like, Roman Catholic is, like, the, like, very devout Catholics.
Her father, Joseph, was a veteran who tended to be distant and didn't really show much affection towards his children. They say that he, like, kind of had the symptoms of PTSD, but that wasn't a thing back then.
Right.
And her mother was described as strict and overbearing and basically controlled all of the aspects of the girls' lives. She controlled what they wore, what they read, and who they could talk to.
Yeah.
Which sounds fucking terrible.
Yeah, but an extremely religious family.
Yep. And as a child, Annalise was happy, full of life, well-behaved, and generous. She loved to sing and play the piano and accordion. Her family was so religious that they actually went to mass twice a week.
Which, like, growing up, I went to church twice a week. On Sundays, I would go to, like, regular service, which is only an hour long max.
Mm-hmm.
And then Wednesdays, I would go to, like, youth group, which was just, like, fun, basically.
Yeah.
And, like, mass. Can you imagine sitting through a mass twice a week? Because that's, like, a 3-hour event sometimes.
Yeah, like, in the past, like, 2 years, my uncle and my grandmother both died, and we had to do, like, a Catholic funeral for them.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
They did a Catholic funeral for my grandma, too.
Yeah.
And I was like, what is this?
And, like, where you were raised religiously, yeah. I wasn't at all.
Yeah.
And so, honestly, it was, like, my first experience with anything, like, really, like, I've been to Catholic weddings, but, like, really, truly Catholic.
Yeah.
And, like, my mom was Catholic and my dad wasn't, and we just weren't raised religious. But when we had to go up for, what is it called? Communion, where they get the wafer and the wine?
Yeah.
Me and my sister did it to be respectful and everything, because it was my grandma. My dad just took the wafer and stuck it in his pocket. And then, like, 10 minutes after the service, he just pulls it out and he goes, hey, anyone want some body of Jesus?
God damn it, Jay.
And yep, and that is the description of my father. besides going to mass twice a week, they would also pray together at home as a family, and they would say a morning and evening prayer daily. She also had three aunts who were nuns, and her father had considered priesthood. They were also so religious that they denied the reformations the Vatican had implemented. There were no simple atonements for sin, and no one could simply get by on atonement for their sins alone. They had to suffer for them.
So, like, in extreme cases, those are the people who do, like, self-flagellation and things like that. Mm-hmm. But
I don't know what that is.
Oh, that's when you, like, hurt yourself. So, like, they'll buy whips and, like, give themselves, like, they'll whip themselves, things like that. Like,
I watched
not a
movie.
Yeah, it was probably a Dan Brown. It was probably...
I think it was called, like, The Vatican or some shit like that.
Oh, okay, then never mind. I was thinking of the one that... What's his dick is in? Tom Hanks. Angels and Demons.
I think that might have been
the
it.
The Da Vinci Code.
It wasn't The Da Vinci Code that we saw.
But Angels and Demons is, like, a follow-up to... The Da Vinci Code.
Yeah. Yeah, Corey watches all the... And I just, like, kind of came in and watched it with him.
But, like, they instead would, like, fast and do things like that. They weren't that extreme. It's really not that common for people to be that extreme, but it does happen.
So, an example of the extremity that this family went through is that the mother, Anna, had actually given birth to an illegitimate daughter before getting married to Joseph. And because of this, she was forced to wear a black veil at her wedding.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. And when Annalise was born, she was told that she had to make up for her mother's sins through her devotion to God.
That makes sense.
Right? So she spent the cold winters sleeping on the wooden floors of her home, hoping God would take her sacrifice as penance for drug addicts who had lost their faith.
Yeah. That's just, like, so serious at such a young age about religion.
It really is.
It's just, it's very difficult. So, this is when the weird shit happens.
Yeah.
Around age 16, Annalise suddenly just blacked out at school and walked around in a trance-like state. She was just being kind of weird. And she didn't remember this event at all, but her friends and family said that she was just walking around in this trance-like state, just not really talking to anybody and looking blank. And once she snapped out of it, Annalise laughed it off and just blamed it on being really tired, not thinking much of the situation. That night, she had reported waking up in the middle of the night and not being able to move or breathe. Like she was experiencing sleep paralysis, but people believed that this was the first sign of her being possessed, because back then we didn't know what sleep paralysis was. So you're fucking possessed. It feels like you're possessed. It's horrible, but
yeah, no, thank you.
After this, one day that she was just kind of weird, life returned back to normal for Annalise. But a year later, the same thing happened again. She woke up in a trance in her bed and had actually wet the bed. She also had another event of sleep paralysis that night. She then started suffering from severe convulsions and was diagnosed with temporal lobe epilepsy after seeing a neurologist. This epilepsy would cause seizures, mood changes, hallucinations, loss of memory, and loss of awareness and surroundings of self. So, the trance-like states. But the doctors didn't prescribe any medication to Annalise at this time, as there were only two instances that this had happened and they were widely spread apart, so they didn't feel like they needed to medicate her for that. In 1973, she graduated from high school and began going to the University of Würzburg to become a teacher. She started struggling with the workload and couldn't pay attention in class. And she also found it difficult to get out of bed some days to attend class. This caused her to become depressed, and she even considered suicide at times. Her classmates described her as withdrawn and extremely religious. Instead of going out with friends, she would stay in her dorm room with pictures of saints on her walls and would pray with a rosary while believing that she was possessed. At the same time, she also began to smell fire and experience upper limb paralysis.
So this is kind of when people believe that she's becoming possessed.
Right.
And not just the things that are happening in her mind. So eventually, Annalise was checked into a psychiatric hospital where she continued to suffer from the seizures. Doctors then placed her on an anti-seizure medication, which stopped the sleep paralysis, but then she began hallucinating. In the hospital, she began to see demonic faces that told her she was damned. They would appear while she prayed, telling her that she was damned and promising that she would stew in hell. This made her believe that she was, in fact, possessed by the devil. She told her doctors about these hallucinations, and they put her on antipsychotic drugs. These meds didn't really help her, and the depression continued. Doctors had even deemed her unfit to be able to make decisions on her own for her own well-being, because she was just, like, always in this weird state of either praying or seeing demonic faces. And the other teenagers in the hospital began making her life miserable there. They would make fun of her and called her a snot-nosed brat, and they started saying that she was possessed by the devil because while she was there, she had actually had another case of sleep paralysis and caused her to wake up screaming when the episode was over, so the kids started making fun of her for this.
Right.
After she left the hospital, the seizures continued, and so did the hallucinations of demons being... demons also persisted. In the beginning of July 1975, Annalise started to claim that she was being visited regularly by Mother Mary. While taking a walk with her fiancé...
When the fuck did she get a fiancé?
She, like, had a boyfriend in college.
Okay.
While taking a walk with her fiancé, Peter, she dropped to her knees, later saying that she was talking to the Virgin Mary at the time. 2 months later, she claims that she was visited again by Mary, who asked her to do a penance for lost souls. After Annalise agreed to this, her possession intensified and she became distant and moody with bits of rage. She had actually taken a pilgrimage trip with a friend who had noticed that she was unable to walk past a crucifix, enter a church, and refused to drink water from a Christian holy spring. Kind of after making that connection, her family was absolutely sure that it was not medical and was, in fact, a possession. Her family also experienced a little bit of paranormal activities after Annalise had come back to stay with them, and they experienced swarms of flies, flickering lights, and would receive telephone calls from people who later claimed that they had never called them.
So, like... I don't believe in possession.
Yeah.
But I firmly believe that people can manifest experiences.
Mm-hmm.
So, like flickering lights and shit going on in your house.
Like there's a swarm of flies, maybe clean out your fridge.
Yeah, like, there's always an explanation for that. Like, I believe in ghosts, but I don't believe in, like, demonic possession and things like that. I think that's, like, a step too far. But I feel like... if they so firmly believed that this was happening, that they kind of, like, manifested those experiences in their life, you know?
And, like, the phone ringing, have you ever had those, like, what is it, like, phantom vibrations of your cell phone? I feel like they just had that, but, like, with the phones back in the 50s.
Yeah, and, like, phones just are weird. Like, I know this was in the 50s, so they're not the same, but, like, even today, I will call Taylor, and he won't pick up, and I'll be like, I am crazy and think you're dead. Like, if I know you're driving, I think you're instantly dead. And he'll, like, show me, and he doesn't have any missed calls and, like, anything like that. And, like, sometimes it just doesn't fucking work.
But after many years of these convulsions without medical science helping, her family turned back to the church, where one of her mother's friends suggested that she may be possessed by the devil.
Right.
So, Annalise's mother liked this idea as an explanation more than her child being mentally ill.
Right.
Which was causing many rumors around the town, which kind of it shows the time that they're in, if they'd rather have their child be possessed than have a mental illness, which is fucking ridiculous.
Yeah. I'm sure there are still some people like that today.
Yeah.
It's or just, like, their kid's gay and they're like, he's possessed by the devil.
Yeah.
I'm honestly. Sorry I did that accent. That's just like, you know.
The accent that's in your head. They went to many different clergymen asking for their help, and they all thought that she was indeed possessed, but denied helping her until they took her to a man named Ernest Ault. It is informative to note that around this time,
yep.
the book The Exorcist, which then became a movie that came to Germany and was a huge success in Germany and won tons of awards, which this movie revolves around a young girl who starts developing signs of possession, could not get help from doctors, so they get an exorcism from a priest instead, which, like, sound familiar?
Yeah, and that kind of stuff, like, after The Exorcist came out in America, they also saw an influx of exorcisms yes. happening. So, I mean, it lines up.
The media!
Up. Yeah. So, there was, like, a little bit of a process to going about getting this exorcism. So, when Ernst, is it Ernest?
Ernest.
Okay.
Ernest Ault.
Ernest Ault. Because his name is spelled Ernst.
It is spelled Ernst.
When he first met Annalise, he just observed her in what had become her natural state because he wanted to get an idea of what was going on. So here is a list of some of the things that he witnessed. She described devilish faces and the things that they told her. She had suicidal episodes and tried to harm herself. She would often, like, slam her head into walls over and over and over again, doing shit like that. And she also had become really violent towards others and destroyed any religious object that she would see. This part's a lot. She urinated on the floor and then proceeded to lap it up like a dog. And there were 2 days where she just hid under a table and barked like a dog. Same.
Yeah.
She also ate coal, spiders, flies, and even bit the head off of a dead bird once. And a weird thing that she would also do is she would compulsively do up to 400 squats a day.
Which is more dedication than I could ever have.
Honestly, her
the glutes
thighs,
on that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. The glutes on that girl must have been great.
And after seeing these things, he believed that it was proof that Annalise did not have a medical condition, but that demons, in fact, had entered her body trying to take her soul.
Correct. Yep, that's the only explanation.
That is. The only thing that could help her was an exorcism in accordance with the Ritual Romanum of 1614. Father Ault made this statement about Annalise trying to go through a church. Annalise told me, and Frau Hein confirmed this, that she was unable to enter the shrine. She approached it with the greatest hesitation, then said that the soil burned like fire and she simply could not stand it. She then walked around the shrine in a wide arc and tried to approach it from the back. She looked at the people who were kneeling in the area surrounding the little garden, and it seemed to her that while praying, they were gnashing their teeth. She got as far as the edge of the little garden, then she had to turn back. Coming from the front again, she had to avert her glance from the picture of Christ, and she made it several times to the garden but could not get past it. She also noted that she could no longer look at medals or pictures of saints. They sparkled so immensely that she could not stand it. So,
same.
Like, yeah.
I also could not enter a church without being burned.
Yes. You're not allowed.
So, after this happened, the exorcisms start. So, Pastor Ault brought this evidence to Bishop Joseph Stengel, along with a letter written by Annalise, in which she explained to the bishop that she wanted to suffer for other people. The request was approved, and former Chinese missionary Father Arnold Renz was sent to work with Father Ault on September 25th, 1975. But they were instructed by the bishop to carry out the exorcisms in total secret because they didn't want the church's name on this at all.
Right.
Father Renz and Father Ault ended up performing 67 sessions of exorcism over 10 months, which is insane.
Yeah.
42 of the of these exorcisms were actually audio recorded, and you can hear some of the clips of the tapes online. They are all in German and Latin, which Annalise was actually fluent in, but you can hear her screams and the changes in her voice and everything.
Have you listened to them?
Yes. A lot of the podcasts that, like, they have clips in there.
Yeah.
And it's really rough. I can't. Like, it's...
Because, like, she does sound like any possessed person you've ever watched in a movie.
Yeah. And, like, it sounds like she's, like, a dying animal.
Yeah.
And then there's, like, bits of talking. But, like, her screams just sound like she's a dying animal.
It is horrible. But there are, like... I forget who, because I remember listening to a podcast with her before. And
Case File has a podcast about her.
Yeah, but they I think that And That's Why We Drink did one too. Mm-hmm. But she's growling while she's talking, and it's really fucking creepy.
Yeah, so we're not going to put any clips of the tapes in there, but you're more than welcome to listen to them yourselves.
Sneaks clip in just to throw fucking Sarah off.
Do it. I dare you. The first exorcism was performed by Alt, Renz, her parents, her fiancé, and her sisters. It started with Father Alt sprinkling holy water on Annalise, which then caused her to scream, put away that shit.
Yeah.
She was not having it.
I wouldn't be having it either.
Right?
Where'd you get that holy water?
She's chained to the bed and shit. These exorcisms were performed 1 to 2 times a week, and for up to 4 hours a day, and Annalise would be chained to the bed while the rite of exorcism was performed. They were recorded on cassettes, and according to the recordings, that's a funny sentence, according to the recordings, she was possessed by a number of demons, including Lucifer, which is the only actual demon.
Yeah.
Judas Iscariot. Is that how you say his name?
I have no idea.
Okay.
I've never seen Judas's last name.
Okay. Nero, Cain from Cain and Abel.
Yeah.
Hitler, who doesn't really need an explanation. And a disgraced Frankish priest named Fleischmann, who, murdered his family from the 16th century. And all these people, besides Hitler, were evil people that she would have learned about in her religious studies, with most of them being from the Bible.
Yeah.
At one point, the demon Judas takes over and says that Hitler's not well-liked in hell because he tends to brag a lot.
That's literally my favorite part of the story.
Yes.
Is that...
Fuck Hitler.
That Judas is complaining about Hitler. It's just so... I don't know. It's just funny to me.
So Hitler also takes over and says, people are stupid as pigs. They think it's all over after death. It goes on. And Lucifer took over her once, and the following conversation transpired, where Lucifer says, the snot-nosed brat was cursed. She belongs to us. She is no longer alive. Father Alt says, is she down with you? Lucifer says, no, I have to say everything. Therefore, the snot-nose has to pay for it. Father Alt goes, you have to get out of her. Lucifer then says, I don't want out yet because I have so much left to say. And so keep in mind that snot nose was something that the kids in the hospital would call her and make fun of her while saying she was possessed by the devil.
Yeah.
So that's kind of a little bit of an explanation, being possessed by Lucifer, calling herself a snot nose.
Yeah.
But that's just kind of... I don't know if it's my opinion, but
No, I keep mean, in mind, she definitely, had an actual physical condition, the seizures.
Yeah.
But she also had some type of mental illness, probably, schizophrenia or something like that, mm-hmm. that was causing her to think these things. And it was just a different time, especially in Germany.
Yeah.
And
in very Catholic Germany.
Yeah, that none of these things were seen, but... There's an actual disease or illness, I think, now that's like explains this away.
Okay.
Yeah, but I forget what it's called.
I know they diagnosed her with something at the end.
Yeah.
So that might be it. But during this exorcisms, she would speak in different languages or in tongues that she didn't previously know beforehand, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Pastor Ault and Father Renz had claimed that they had been able to get rid of all the demons, or all but one of the demons that were inside of her. But then they returned the next day.
Yeah.
During these sessions, Annalise would frequently talk about dying to atone for the wayward youth of the day and the apostate priests of the modern church. During one of the exorcisms, the demons were asked why they possessed Annalise. Why did they choose her? And the demons replied that she had been cursed for her mother's infidelity.
Which is also something she was told from the day she was born, essentially.
That she had to, you know, atone for her mother's sins.
Which is just, like, doesn't fucking make any sense.
Yeah.
But whatever. Sorry that you had a child out of wedlock and are making your daughter be punished for it. But whatever.
Sorry, you're a shit person.
The one thing that was super weird is that for a while, the sessions actually seemed to work, to the point where she was able to return to school and also attend church. However, this didn't last for long. In spring of 1976, Annalise's seizures worsened again, to the point where she began to attack her family members, often biting and scratching at them. And if she couldn't hurt other people, she would begin to hurt herself. She would hit her head against the wall, beat herself. She would, like, chew into the walls.
Yeah, like, bite holes in the walls.
Yeah. And this caused her teeth to break, naturally. And she even smashed her head through a window once. She also wouldn't eat anything, saying the demons didn't allow it, but also said that it was her choice, not the choice of the demons. And this is an oh no fact.
Okay.
Yeah, this fact grosses me out. So she would collapse to her knees and rise up so quickly and then like slam back into the ground. She repeated this motion so much that she broke her kneecaps and ripped the tendons in her knees doing this.
Yeah,
so she just like destroyed her knees.
It's terrible.
Like, ugh, it just grosses me out so much.
Like, imagine, like,
no, I don't want to imagine it, Sarah. Don't fucking make me imagine.
Well, I was just gonna say, like, when a football player or an athlete like breaks their knees or like rips their ACL or something, they're out for weeks or months,
or their whole career is over.
Yeah,
depends really.
And she just keeps fucking going.
Yeah, and even with this happening, her parents still wouldn't listen to medical advice. And would even help hold her up and down as she continued to drop to her knees to pray. Which
is like abuse for your fucking child.
Yeah. The parents in general are not good parents.
No, they are not.
She ended up starving herself and not drinking water for the better part of a year. Like, just enough to keep her alive, essentially. And during her last exorcism on June 30th of 1976, Annalise was so weak that she could not move her body anymore, and her parents had to carry her through the motions. She died at her home in her sleep on July 1st of 1976.
Which was the day after her last exorcism.
Yeah. At the time of her death, Annalise was 23 years old and weighed 68 pounds, so like the size of a 10-year-old.
Yes.
After her death, her father rushed to get a medic to give her a certificate of death saying that she died of natural causes. However, the medic refused and ordered an autopsy to see what the fuck happened.
Yeah, good on him.
Yes. The cause of her death was severe dehydration and malnutrition, along with having a high fever and pneumonia. But her internal organs, including her brain, were all found to be healthy. Her last words to the exorcist were, "beg for absolution," and her last words to her mother were, "mother, I'm afraid."
Which is so sad.
So sad, and her mother was the one basically forcing her to go through this.
Mm-hmm.
Your daughter is sick.
Yeah, she's
Like, literally she needs medical help. Take her there instead of fucking doing this.
Yeah, instead of just sprinkling more holy water on her.
Yeah.
So this is kind of what makes this an actual crime. After Anneliese's death, her story became a national sensation in Germany, with both supporters of the exorcism and people who opposed the religious ceremony. An investigation was launched into the death of Anneliese Michel. I almost called her Anneliese Michael. A state prosecutor determined that her death could have been prevented even 1 week before she died if she had been forced to eat, drink, and had just been taken care of better.
Yeah.
But during the trial, Anneliese's sister did testify that Anneliese did not want to eat, let alone be force-fed, because she had been intent on dying for others' sins.
Which, like, the thing that she says to the priest, like, is that she deserves to, like, have these sins, but she's, like, in so much pain. She said she wanted to suffer for other people, but this is so cruel. Mm-hmm. Like, what was happening to her was so cruel. So I just, I'm sorry, fucking make her eat. Like, take her to a hospital and make her fucking eat if exactly. you want her to live.
You're her parent.
Like, just because she's saying I don't want to eat, like, fucking step in if you want her to live. But it's fine.
Yeah, and, like, the hospital deemed her unfit to make her own decisions. Then yeah. You can't make that an excuse.
If the hospital deems her unfit to make her decisions, her parents are legally supposed to make the decisions for her. Yeah. So, like, it's one. This gets me heated. Like, this whole story gets me heated because just, like, when religion just kills people so often.
Yeah.
Like, it's just fine. It's fine.
Because of this, in 1976, the state charged Michelle's parents, Anna and Joseph, along with priests Ernest Ault and Arnold Renz, with neglect homicide. During the case, the tapes recorded during the exorcism were played to the court, and her parents had actually got her body to be exhumed, trying to prove somehow from her body that she was possessed, like saying that it was going to be decomposed differently or something like that because she was possessed.
Right.
But her body ended up being, it was exhumed, but her body showed normal signs of decomposition, and the judge had actually refused to let her parents see the body.
Yeah.
Which is good. That's on fair. The judge. Yeah. The priests were represented by lawyers provided by the church, and the parents had to provide for their own lawyers. So they got a lawyer named Aaron Schmidt-Leishner to represent them. She was a top lawyer who had actually defended subjects in the Nazi war trials.
Love that.
Right? The state recommended that no involved parties be jailed, which is intense. Instead, they suggested that the priests were only fined and that her parents should be exempt from any form of punishment as they had suffered enough, which was a criterion in German penal law, which is hashtag bullshit, in my opinion.
That is bullshit. So, the actual trial started on March 30th of 1978, and the trial was performed in front of only a judge with no jury, which people typically do when they know a jury will convict them.
Yeah.
Doctors testified before the court saying that Anneliese was not possessed and that her quote-unquote possession was a psychological effect based on her strict religious upbringing and her epilepsy and other psychological problems, like psychogenic psychosis, delusion, and depression.
That's the one that yeah. I think psychogenic psychosis.
It might be. There was one doctor, Richard Roth, who had actually seen Anneliese while her health was deteriorating during the exorcisms, and he was brought there by the request of Ernest Ault. He had told her, "There is no injection against the devil, Anneliese." Father Alt had testified that she was not able to eat due to the influence of the demons and that Annalise refused any medical help, and he stuck with his argument that she was possessed, like, till the end, basically. The parents' lawyer had argued that the exorcism was legal because the German Constitution protects citizens in the unrestricted practice of their own religious beliefs, which also seems like a hashtag bullshit law.
Separation of church and state?
Yes. Both the defense and prosecution used the recorded tapes of the exorcism for their arguments. The defense used it to show that the girl was possessed, where the prosecution used it to show that the girl was suffering from severe epilepsy and psychosis, as well as the neglect that she faced. The four were eventually found guilty of manslaughter resulting from negligence. They were sentenced to 6 months in jail, which was later excused, and 3 years probation. The priests were also forced to pay a fine. They should have gotten longer.
Definitely.
The trial had been described as the biggest trial in Germany besides the Nazi war crime trials.
Which is intense.
That is intense. But, like, for sure should have gotten more time.
Definitely. Like, they basically killed this girl.
Yeah. Like, their negligence was the result cause of her death. And it was, like, it doesn't even feel like negligence. It feels on purpose at that point.
Mm-hmm. And, like, I read that through this, she was on and trying, like, a bunch of different medicines, which, like, I didn't want to just list the name of all these medicines because none of them worked. But she, like, would get kind of better and then get worse and get kind of better and get worse.
Yeah.
And it's, like, that's what people have to do is find the right combination of medicine for you.
Yeah, especially if you have that many ailments.
Yeah, and just not give yourself a fucking exorcism.
Yeah, like, I literally have, like, bipolar and depression, and just finding no medicine for those fucking things is a pain. So, like, it's gonna take a minute before you find the right fucking combination.
Yeah, because every medicine also works different for every person.
Yeah.
But out on our medication rants. After the trial, almost 2 years after her burial, Annalise's parents ordered that her body be exhumed again in order to give her a proper resting place, as her body was buried in a hurry in a cheap coffin, which is kind of nice. But yeah, whatever. Her parents are still trash. Her body was then moved to a new oak coffin with a big, beautiful headstone. After her death, Annalise became an icon for some Catholics who believed that she, in fact, did die for their sins and felt a connection to her, believing that she was an unofficial saint with the ability to save lost souls through her past suffering. Which, like, I feel like they think that she's, like, a saint or a Jesus that, like, they can see and, like, visit, I guess?
Yeah, like a saint in their time type thing.
And her final resting place became a popular site that people actually still visit today and, like, take pilgrimages there. And they pray with her and leave notes of requests for her on her gravestone. And the story of Annalise has made its way across the media, with three movies being based on her, including The Exorcism of Emily Rose, while many online stories and articles and songs. And this was, like, the one thing I just wanted to include because it's fucking weird.
Yeah.
That some of her clips from her exorcism are used in the Nine Inch Nails song Communion of the Cursed. Which I just think is weird, and I don't know why, but I wanted to include it because, like, they're really creepy.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's weird to have it in a song, I guess.
It is weird.
But that is the unfortunate death and story of Annalise Michelle.
Which could have been totally easily prevented.
Thanks to modern medicine.
Blink, blink. Yeah. Not even fucking modern medicine, man. They could have done it then, too. She probably would have had to have, like, been in a facility for people with mental illnesses for a couple of years, like, while they got that shit under control. But you would still have your daughter.
Yeah.
Like, that's,
you wouldn't be killing her.
Yeah, she wouldn't be dead because of the lack of fucking, like, adults in her life who could see what she actually needed, despite medical professionals telling you over and over and over again. I don't get it.
But Jesus.
You're right. But Jesus.
So since we're so worked up.
Yes.
Let's calm us down.
I'll show you something of a man who's even more worked up than us.
Oh, God.
So here is the title. North Fort Myers man attacked friend with a sword after argument over penmanship. So.
Okay.
Sean Taylor, 54, is accused of assaulting the victim after a drunken argument over his penmanship.
Okay, 54?
Yes.
Wow.
The two were drinking at Taylor's apartment on Hart Drive in North Fort Myers, the report said. After arguing, Taylor told the victim that he wanted to have sex with him. Then the victim declined his advances, so he left the room and returned with a sword and sliced at the victim. The victim fled the residence and was found by someone who then called to help. He was treated for the wounds on his forearm, and Taylor was charged with aggravated battery with a deadly weapon. So, I guess the initial argument was about penmanship, and then he was like, but let's fuck. And he was like, nah, no. Man.
Yeah.
They have been friends for about 7 years before that. So.
Wow.
Yes. So, there. Sean Taylor has a sword at 54. Don't have swords. It's weird.
Every time you said, like, Taylor's apartment, I was like, this sounds weird.
But we hoped you enjoyed that episode and that you have a, like, spooky Friday the 13th, but not too spooky, you know? Like, a fun kind of spooky.
Yeah, like, you can see a black cat, but, like,
you don't get cursed.
Fuck with it. Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't break the mirror over the black cat's head.
What the fuck is wrong with you?
I don't know. I just wanted to combine some of them.
Why was harming an animal?
You don't see the black cat go under the open ladder. I don't know. I can only think of a few.
That would be better. That would be better. Yeah. Let's not harm the black cat.
No cats were harmed in the making of this podcast.
It's true. But go out. Fucking buy yourself a black cat. Most shelters on Friday the 13th will, like, give you a free black cat because they're the least bought kittens.
Yeah, go get a, like, a Friday the 13th little $13 tattoo at your local tattoo parlor.
You go and live your best life.
Yep, you do Friday the 13th yourself. Go see it.
Yeah, do that. That sounds fun. But as always, you can check us out at Crime Binge Podcast on Instagram, Crime Binge on Twitter, crimebinge@gmail.com, and Crime Binge Group if you want to go and hang out and chat on Facebook. And please leave us a review. That really, really helps us out. And if you're already listening every week, you might as well just tell us about it.
Exactly. Like, just be like, hey, you guys are kind of annoying, but I like it.
It's fair. We are annoying. And
keep on binging.
Bye.
See ya.